prayed to temptation, for his hands are so cold. You gotta help me keep the devil way down in the hole.
Good morning. You are tuned to KBOO Portland, and the time now is just about 11 o'clock. Coming up on The Boo at 11:30, Making Contact travels to Puerto Rico to focus on the quiet revolution that's grown out of resistance to austerity. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by members' support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate. And now, coming up next on Health Watch today, Ellen Goldsmith speaks with Dr. Wendy Lee White and Dr. Regina Dehan about diabetes prevention. Stay tuned.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
The purpose of this program is not to prescribe a treatment to individuals. Listeners should consult their healthcare practitioner before attempting any treatment.
Hello and welcome to Health Watch. I'm Ellen Goldsmith, licensed acupuncturist, your host, the second Monday of every month. And I've been away for a couple of months, so I'm really happy to be here today. The Center for Disease Control reported that as of 2015, 30.3 million Americans, that's 9.4% of the U.S. population, have diabetes. But there are another 84 million Americans that have a condition called prediabetes, a condition that, if left untreated, can often lead to type 2 diabetes within the next 5 years. Diabetes is a life-threatening disease, but it's preventable. And today I'm speaking with two naturopathic physicians from the National University of Natural Medicine, NUNM, located here in Portland, to talk with us about the Diabetes Prevention Program at NUNM starting this coming February in 2019. NUNM is the oldest accredited naturopathic medical school in North America and the leader in natural medicine education and evidence-based research. Its health centers and affiliated community clinics provide healthcare services to thousands of patients each year. And in the studio today, we have two of the leaders of this diabetes prevention program, Dr. Regina Dehan, naturopathic physician, licensed acupuncturist, who is chief medical officer at the NUNM clinic, as well as clinician, researcher, and educator. She's responsible for developing NUNM's clinical policy, establishing clinical quality measures, as well as assessing patient outcomes. She's a member of the Oregon Health Authority's Medicare Advisory Committee and a former advisory member for Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute. And Dr. Wendy Lee White, naturopathic physician, nutritionist, and educator who teaches at NUNM and has developed and leads NUNM's diabetes prevention program. She has a private practice here in Portland at Portland Natural Health. Dr. Regina Dehan and Dr. Wendy Lee White, welcome to Health Watch.
Hi, Thank Ellen. You. Good morning.
Nice to be here.
So let's just start with letting our listeners know what the risk factors for developing diabetes is. Who'd like to start?
You can go ahead if you have to.
This is Dr. Wendy White.
Right.
So the risk factors for diabetes include being overweight, sedentary lifestyle, making poor kind of standard American diet and lifestyle choices, certain ethnicities are increased risk.
So there are certain ethnicities where actually the diabetes doesn't really show up in that conventional way that we think of, like being overweight. Mm-hmm. And so could you talk a little bit about what ethnicities might have a higher kind of hidden risk for that?
Sure. Virtually all Latin American folks, Native Americans, Alaskan Natives, African Americans, all of those folks have a much higher risk of diabetes, about twice that of the Caucasian population.
And is there any underlying reason for that, or?
It must be genetic. It must be genetic.
Mm-hmm. There's also, I've heard that there was a study released years ago. It was reported in the New York Times that Asian Americans, recent immigrants here, had a higher incidence of developing diabetes from the change from a more traditional diet to an industrialized diet.
Yes, sure. I suspect that's a lot of it.
So all those perusing down the aisles of sugary processed foods probably doesn't do anyone any good.
No.
Well, and also in addition to the dietary choices, there's lifestyle and stress. And so stress can increase a chance of developing type 2 diabetes. Mm-hmm. And so any population that inherently has socioeconomic stress, I think that plays a huge role as well.
Dr. White was just looking at an article this morning that indicates that women are at a higher risk of developing stress-related diabetes. And so that's probably just the tip of the iceberg in terms of beginning to peel away the layers of elevated cortisol means more sugar in your bloodstream. So as we have more and more traumatized populations, we're probably also going to see a spike in the development of diabetes.
So it's this kind of hidden hidden thing going on for a lot of people. I mean, what would someone start to kind of wonder, like, am I moving towards diabetes? What would, for educating our listeners, what would they start to look for or think about?
Often it just starts by seeing their fasting blood sugar elevated, you know, on an annual lab or whatever. You know, if they're getting general screening labs on an annual basis, it's going to be that blood sugar and elevated triglycerides that might be two of the first lab reports to indicate, oh, wait a minute, something's brewing. We then can follow up with other, you know, hemoglobin A1C is a follow-up that gives you not just a snapshot, but also a three-month indication of how your blood sugar has been doing.
So what is hemoglobin A1C for our lay people out there?
Yeah, I always describe it as your tissues caramelize if there's too much blood sugar around on a regular basis, and that caramelization can be measured with this hemoglobin A1C.
Right. It's a protein. Hemoglobin is the protein in your blood that actually binds the oxygen. So it's in every red blood cell, and it has a high affinity for sugar as well. So the sugar will stick to the hemoglobin, and then you can measure that as an indicator of the last 3 months, because that's as long as those red blood cells survive. You know, one other group that's at high risk are pregnant women. Anyone with a previous history of gestational diabetes is at risk of developing diabetes. And those folks would find out when they were going in for prenatal care. It's one of the basic tests that's run to see what your blood sugar is doing, because it puts you at risk of growing a very big baby. And then they're very difficult to deliver. So that whole...
No fun for anyone.
Yeah, no fun for anyone. And plus then the children themselves, those babies are then also at risk of developing diabetes later. So that exposure to a lot of sugar during the pregnancy kind of sets someone up for a long history, a long course of challenges.
The alarming statistic also is that any person born after the year 2000 has a 1 in 3 chance of developing cardiovascular disease or diabetes even before adulthood.
Wow.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And we so let's talk about the difference between type 2 diabetes, which is the full-blown disease, and prediabetes. You've talked about seeing it in screening, but what are the real differences here? Like if someone gets that, hey, you're pre-diabetic, and they go, oh, well, maybe I just cut out the sugar for a week or something.
If only.
Yeah, if only it were that easy.
Right.
I think but it does come down to kind of that reversible ease. So if someone has pre-diabetes, it means that there's a physiological process going on, but that it hasn't done anything from a pathological standpoint that wouldn't be able to be reversed. So the body is still adjusting, it's just struggling to adjust. Whereas when someone gets to diabetes, they could be requiring medication, they could be requiring insulin, because the pancreas, which is the organ of the body that makes the insulin that helps the blood sugar get the sugar get from the blood to the cells, if the pancreas just gets too tired and stops producing insulin, then someone is then relying on the insulin that comes from the pharmaceutical.
Right.
So prediabetes can be very easily exchanged for a normal non-diabetic diagnosis with diet, lifestyle, and stress management. Mm-hmm. I always talk about it as a three-legged stool.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the food piece, the movement piece, and then it's the stress management piece, mm-hmm. and really helping the body cope with the crazy world that we mm-hmm. live in.
So, you know, we know that even though people want to change, and of course, anyone who gets a prediabetes diagnosis is going to say, hey, you know, I don't want to get diabetes.
Mm-hmm. Sure, it's scary.
Right, it's very scary. But we also know that change is really, really hard when mm-hmm. you're talking about diet, mm-hmm. lifestyle, stress management,
yeah.
Exercise, you know, all those things that, you know, kind of take a big bulldozer to push people forward.
Mm-hmm. I am going to counter that, though, because I think a lot of people believe that it has to be hard. And so while the next cohort is starting in February, I'm in the middle of cohort two right now, and cohort one was a 2017 project.
This is the diabetes prevention program
correct,
at NUNM.
Yes.
Okay.
And so it has not been hard. It has been the feedback of my previous patients so far, because I think that's the benefit of taking the diabetes prevention program at NUNM, because we have more of a holistic approach. We do take the CDC curriculum and we talk about their recommendations for calories and food consumption and movement, but because we're a holistic profession, we take that information and we break it down to really manageable lifestyle baby steps. And so I think a lot of people believe that it would be really hard. But in reality, when we're meeting weekly for 3 months, and then we meet twice a month, and then we meet monthly, they're basically getting their hands held, and we're talking about what the challenges are, and they're getting peer-to-peer support, and they're getting ideas from me with my 10 years of experience guiding people through, you know, this is your life. Be empowered to make the changes so that you feel better. And then once you feel better, it's easier to make the changes. And it just goes that way.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So you brought up a really good point that change is hard if you're all alone trying to make change.
Yes.
But if you're in a community of people and you have the structure and the guidance mm-hmm. and the accountability,
absolutely,
then you're like a big wave moving and
right.
moving together,
right? And not only is it group support, but it's also broken down into the baby steps. So it's not like we're telling someone, here's your new diet and here's your new movement routine and here are all your stress management techniques, off you go. Weekly we're breaking it down to very, you know, one day we might talk very specifically about food, next session very specifically about movement, and then we might talk a month later about food as it relates to being out at a restaurant or being out at a party. So it's all very detailed and baby steps to be all put together.
So what are the you know, without divulging people, but but what are you hearing from people who come to this program, like that what are their challenges and what are their successes?
I think the challenges are that we do live in a culture where it is quick and easy to get a lot of refined foods with high chemical contents.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very easy not to move our bodies. And it's very easy to get overwhelmed by the amount of information coming in, access to technology and stress and the world's problems 24/7. So I think those are all the challenges. And I think they're the challenges that most of us can relate to, right? Because we all live in this.
Mm-hmm.
And then the solutions that come is that people do come in feeling, one of the challenges, feeling as though it should be hard or that it's going to be hard, or they're bracing themselves for losing all the pleasures in their life. And that's just not the case. I think a lot of people have indicated that they've been pleasantly surprised at how easy it was taking the education and using the very applicable baby steps that we talk about to just go home and make a very specific effort, you know, for one thing a week to be able to transition to.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a black and white. It's not an all or nothing. And because we have the holistic perspective, which makes our diabetes prevention program different from the others in the Portland area, it is... it is more nurturing. It is mm-hmm. more supportive. It is more educational. It's not just you must do this. Mm-hmm. It's here are the ways you can do things and why.
I think one of the other things that I've also heard is people feel like they have to do this alone.
Mm-hmm.
That there's, I have to fix my diet. I have to exercise. Yeah. I have to get to that class. And they find when they actually overcome that small barrier and join the class, they join mm-hmm. the program, they've joined a small community of participants that are like-minded.
Right.
And they have support. They have support there that is specific and detailed and gives them tools, because that's mm-hmm. another thing is I have to do this and I have no idea
right.
how to go back. From
so overwhelming.
Right. So now I'm going into this group of other people who are in exactly the same situation I am. And we're all motivated to do something good for ourselves mm-hmm. that involves enabling and in a good way, empowering yeah. people, yeah. giving them agency to change their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And they look forward to that moment. They want to go there. It's worth the overcoming that inertia of mm-hmm. to like, I'm going to go do this thing and be with these other people. And I like these people and I like what I learn. And it makes me have power over this thing that has been sneaking up on me.
Yeah.
So let's break it down a little bit, like a baby step.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give us a real practical thing of a small baby step?
Yeah. So, for example, one week we might talk about sugar in food or in refined carbohydrates. So one homework assessment might be to go and say, I'm going to read all the labels of everything I buy that has a label and look for all of the things that could mean sugar, corn syrup, evaporated cane juice, high fructose corn syrup, sugar, molasses, honey,
dextrose,
anything. So we talk about like how sugar can hide, because truthfully, if you're going to choose to eat sugar, choose to eat it. Don't have it
sneak in
mm-hmm. all of these places that you don't expect.
Mm-hmm. So you give them, you know, and we know that 80% of the food supply has hidden sugar with 56 different names.
Yes.
So that, you know, so when people go and they come back after they've done this, where they've gone, they've done their homework, they've mm-hmm. read all the labels, what are the insights people are having?
It's amazing that they think, wow, this is so unfair that mm-hmm. our culture is doing this to us, mm-hmm. that our food supply is doing this to us.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, absolutely, it is unfair. So pay attention.
Right.
These are the things you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And pay attention. You have the power to choose. Yeah. If you're looking at two ketchup products, for example, compare.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
There's a little bit of indignation, I think, that comes back. It's
absolutely.
Like, why is there sugar in my salad dressing?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
So again, it's like hiding in plain sight, mm-hmm. really, sugar.
Absolutely.
But, you know, sugar is a really big deal for people
mm-hmm.
to change,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it is addictive. It hits those, you know, centers in the brain that hit same as cocaine.
Mm.
And so when people are starting to come off of sugar, and mm-hmm. this is just benefit for our listeners,
mm-hmm.
too, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, they may start to experience good things, or they may start to yeah. experience, you know, cravings, mm-hmm. et cetera, kind of like a withdrawal symptoms.
Right.
And how do you work with that when you're really changing diet with people who really have an addiction to sugar and it's
yeah.
not their fault? I mean,
and so,
it's just the way it is.
This is a long philosophical discussion. Mm. I actually don't think sugar is an addiction. I think that we are animals who do enjoy pleasure, and we are biologically programmed to want an easy source of energy
mm-hmm.
because that's what would help us live if we were animals out in the wild. But philosophical discussion aside, once people realize that they're getting their needs met from the sugar, whether it's an emotional need, a physical need, then I encourage people, and again, this is the benefit of being at an NUNM program for the diabetes prevention as opposed to like a mainstream program, is that we'll talk about the fact that what are other ways we can meet those emotional needs that might be being met by the sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different perspective,
mm-hmm.
I think.
And I would add, I mean, if any of my former students are listening, they'll hear me say something they've heard before, which is, your brain is a pig. And I mean that in a kind way. It wants glucose as its fuel supply. 70% of the energy requirements of your body are actually satisfied by fats. Most of the other cells of your body are perfectly happy using fats. Your muscles
except
love it,
your
for
brain.
Instance. Yeah, but except your brain. Except your brain. Your brain's biochemistry is actually programmed. It's selective to run best with sugar. So when we are stressed, mm-hmm. the thing that runs the ship, right? The guy in charge, the person mm-hmm. in charge, the brain in charge wants sugar to help it cope. Mm. And so understanding some of that physiology is some of what Dr. White teaches so yeah. that people understand that when they're putting themselves or if they have very stressful lives or very stressful situations, that is the go-to. You're being driven by that pig inside to go, I need this. This is what I want. This will help me cope. Mm-hmm. Having enough other nutrient sources, nutrient-dense foods that help sustain a steady rate of kilocalories as opposed to the quick spike that you get mm-hmm. from the sugar is, in the long run, so much more effective. It's more efficient. Your brain gets used to it. It feels less stressed out. It gives you less of that drive, that mm-hmm. sort of panicked, I need this now. And so it's all about sort of shifting the awareness and developing a sort of mindfulness about that demand and being able to speak back to that sort of little piggy drive mm-hmm. and saying, no, that's not what's best for me. That is not what's going to sustain me in the long run. I'd also suggest it's almost an act of sedition to fight that simple reach for the processed foods. The American food products industry has a huge amount of collateral and drives us to, I mean, it does research to make the stuff
absolutely
as powerfully, as powerful of a draw as it possibly could. I mean, that smell, the flavor, the color, all of it. Mm-hmm. Fight that. That is what you're fighting. As mm-hmm. one single individual, you have the power of choice. And it makes a huge difference over the long run if you do that small act of defiance.
Agreed.
Of, no, I'm not reaching for that thing.
Yeah.
I'm reaching for this. The carrot? Yeah. I'm going for that beautiful, bright, shiny vegetable mm-hmm. as opposed yes. to that packaged thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, in this holistic approach to working and changing one's blood sugar to mm-hmm. move away from a diabetic state, mm-hmm. Just the holism seems, again, you're saying it's the education about food, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. It's the education about exercise, mm-hmm, yes?
Which I call movement because it doesn't have to be at a gym.
Exactly. You can just dance around your house. And
yes, absolutely.
Enough. Do lots of housework, same uh-huh. thing. That works well, too.
Yeah.
And stress management.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about the stress management and what kind of tools, because the world is so stressful, just because of the state of the world, but mm-hmm. also, you know, technology, as you said earlier.
Correct.
And yet people don't even have time to manage their stress, they think. But
agreed.
But we do.
We do.
Just talk a little bit about that leg of the stool.
Yeah. So we talk about, first of all, identifying what ways in which we each as an individual become stressed, because for everyone it's different. We all have certain triggers. We all have things we can tolerate more than others. So it's about identifying what does cause us stress, first and foremost, and then doing a little problem solving around each one of those topics. So identifying my life schedule causes me stress. Okay, well, what can we do about that? What can we do? Can we set up a calendar? Can we let go of things? You know, we can really literally problem solve in as the group discussion continues. And I like to encourage people, especially from my patients who come to me for stress, you know, they want just this adrenal support pill, right? And sure, we can support their system through stress. But if they're continuing to overflow their bucket, helping to drain a little bit out the bottom isn't going to help. So it's really about mindfully choosing mm-hmm. how we want to live in a way that we can manage. Now, this is a very privileged way of thinking. There are many causes of stress that we have no control over. And so then we need to work on what helps to center ourselves amidst the stress. We talk about meditation and breath and prayer and nature connection and connection with family members and friends and tools to help us through, because we can control some of it and some of it we just cannot. So how can we help physiologically support our body in those cases?
Right. So you're talking about the difference. This this program, the Diabetes Prevention Program, is a CDC curriculum, you
said? It is, yes.
So NUNM was chosen as a site, or you...
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that, Dr. D.
So several years ago, when I was at a patient-centered outcomes research institute learning advisory panel,
that was a mouthful.
One of the topics that came up was trying to prevent and manage diabetes. And during the discussion of the advisory panel, the National Institutes of Health Research Diabetes Prevention Program came up as a NIH invested millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars, doing research across the United States on the comparison between diet and lifestyle changes against metformin. So the study included thousands of people.
And metformin is the medication
that's used
usually
in
diabetes
to
treatment.
Treat, yes, exactly, mm-hmm. to treat both prediabetes and diabetes. Because the idea was if you started on metformin, you could prevent the diabetes from developing. Well, it turned out after a five-year study and millions of dollars of research that the arm that did the lifestyle changes and the diet modification actually did better than the metformin arm, mm-hmm. and that then they extended it because they wanted to make sure that, like, really? And they wanted to extend the research, so they extended it for 10 full years. And at 10 years out, the folks who had done the diet and lifestyle were doing better and had prevented diabetes more effectively than the arm that had done the metformin. And so then it was irrefutable that the money needed to be put not into making a new medication that was better at doing what metformin did. Mm-hmm. It was, how do we teach people how to actually do the good thing to
yes.
prevent diabetes in the first place with lifestyle and diet choices? And
yes.
and then I came back to the college from my advisory panel. I was like, oh my gosh, we so need to get on top of this. As naturopaths, this is part and parcel of what
yes,
we do. This is our philosophy validated by the NIH in this fabulous program that we can become a part of. So we applied and mm-hmm. they acknowledged our enrollment. So
that's yeah. great. That's a coup for
right.
for the naturopathic profession
right.
to have this curriculum.
Yeah.
So now is NUNM's program also part of the study too, or is their study is completed? They're not doing anymore. Is this going into all the data?
All of the data is still being collected mm-hmm. by the CDC, and
okay.
and technically the university isn't. We're an official site that provides mm-hmm. the CDC program, but in order to actually get reimbursed for it from Medicare, we actually have to submit 2 years worth of data that indicates that we've kept track of all of the patients that are in the program. So we're in the process of yeah. doing that now.
That's great. So let's get down to the nitty-gritty because we only have just a few minutes left.
Oh, sure.
Which is your the next cohort is starting in February of 2019.
Correct. It will be on Tuesday evenings, 5:30 to 7 p.m. as of February 12th.
Okay. So how can people sign up? How much does it cost? Who can attend?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So anyone who meets the criteria of prediabetes can attend. So it's based on blood sugar, body weight, history of gestational diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
Hemoglobin A1C levels, as we had referred to earlier. So those are kind of all the things that people can tell. There is a website that someone can go to see if they do qualify. And you can go to nunmhealthcenters.com. and find the diabetes prevention program through there.
Well, it will have the questions listed. It's a little screening questionnaire, and you'll
right.
find out if you meet the criteria. And if you're curious, you can come to the lab and have your hemoglobin A1C tested.
And it's the lab at the NUNM
mm-hmm.
Health
but
Clinic.
Center. Yeah, any clinic can do it, but
mm-hmm.
yes, we definitely offer it at the college, the university.
And it's the health center there is located right off the Ross Island Bridge. It's a little...
In
Southwest Portland, right?
Now in South Portland, as we're being renamed.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Well, it's a little north of the waterfront there.
Correct.
So they're between two unusual places.
Exactly.
So, and how much does it cost for someone
to... So most insurance companies will reimburse for it. If you have an insurance plan that does not, it's $25 per session.
And how many sessions are there?
There are 22 sessions total in the one-year program. We
mm-hmm.
meet weekly for the first 12, then we meet twice a month, and then it's monthly for the last 6 months. So we really get those baby steps taken first, lots of hand-holding in those first few months, and then we gradually space it out as someone becomes more and more capable of maintaining it on their own.
And where is it held?
We held the sessions at the Health Got Research Institute on Southwest First, which is just an offshoot satellite of NUNM's main campus.
Mm-hmm. And that's where the graduate programs happen. Does it happen?
Absolutely.
Does it happen in that beautiful kitchen?
No, it happens in the classroom next to the beautiful kitchen.
All righty. So, and is there an age limit? Do you have to be 18 or over, or?
You know?
Oh, they're stumped.
Yeah, we are stumped.
We looked at each other for a
I was like, we know all of the other criteria, but I don't think there is an age limit.
I do not believe there is an age limit.
Okay, because we are seeing teenagers.
Younger and younger,
frighteningly
absolutely.
So, yes.
And that's a really good time to turn things around.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it is a preventable disease.
It is
absolutely.
Preventable. And in the long run.
It's so easy. It does not have to be difficult.
No, you're going to be healthier your whole life if you just make these changes now. You're going to influence the people around you to make better choices. The impact that this has is potentially
friends, families and coworkers.
It's profound the impact that this has.
So I really encourage our listeners to go to nunmhealthcenters.com/diabetes-prevention to learn more and to sign up for this fantastic program that starts in the middle of February of 2019.
They can also call 503-552-1551 to make an appointment.
Fantastic. Dr. Regina Dehan, Dr. Wendy Lee White of NUNM's Diabetes Prevention Program, thank you so much for being with us today on Health Watch.
Thanks so much for having us, Ellen.
You can listen to this episode and more episodes of Health Watch online at kboo.org/healthwatch. I'm Ellen Goldsmith, licensed acupuncturist, your host. I will be on leave again for the next few months and look forward to being back on Health Watch with you in the late winter. To your health.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a development director. This 32-hour-a-week position develops and implements the yearly fundraising plan, develops promotional and press materials, and supports the anti-oppression work of KBOO. Send a cover letter and resume to Delphine Crescenzo at del@kboo.org or send to KBOO Development Hire, 20 Southeast 8th, Portland, Oregon 97214. Please answer in the cover letter the question, why is KBOO important? Deadline to apply is Sunday, November 25th at midnight. More information on the development director position is available at kboo.fm/developmenthire2018.
I'm Monica Lopez, and this week on Making Contact, we